The following episode of the Medical Alley podcast is a replay of a webinar hosted on January 31st titled Transforming Regulatory Compliance with Artificial Intelligence, sponsored by RegDesk. The discussion focused on how artificial intelligence is impacting regulatory compliance. Panelists included Priya Paul of RegDesk, Liz Haynes of Transmedics, and Don Ellis of Riva Medical. You can view the video of the webinar on the Medical Alley YouTube channel. Please enjoy the conversation on AI and regulatory compliance. The Medical Alley podcast is brought to you by MentorMate. MentorMate empowers healthcare clients to deliver on their mission and transform the human experience through technology. For over 20 years, clients have trusted MentorMate to guide their vision, design innovative products, and build secure solutions while understanding the specific nuances of their industry. MentorMate's global team in the US, Eastern Europe, and Latin America helps clients in all sectors of healthcare transform their organizations, from Fortune 500 pharmaceutical companies and commercial payers to hospital systems, medical device manufacturers, and beyond. Learn more at mentormate.com/healthcare.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to today's Medical Alley webinar presented by RegDesk. My name is Ben Wagner. I'm going to be moderating today's discussion. It's great to be with you today and great to be with our talented panel of experts. Our topic today is transforming regulatory compliance with artificial intelligence. And you can see our speakers here on the screen who are going to be leading this conversation. Important to note, we'll have a few minutes at the end of this discussion for questions. There's a Q&A function here that you'll be able to submit questions to our panel. We're also going to have a poll question, which we would appreciate everybody answering. It just popped up on my screen. I hope it pops up on yours as well. Answer that question. We'll have some of the results here kind of throughout this webinar. And another important note, we are recording this conversation too, so if you'd like to watch it back again or send it to a colleague, you'll get a link in an email after this webinar ends. So with that, let's get to our experts here today. With us is Don Ellis. He's the Vice President of Global Regulatory Affairs at Riva Medical. Liz Haynes, Vice President of Global Regulatory Affairs at Transmedics, Inc. And Priya Paul, the founder and the CEO of RegDesk. It's great to be with the three of you here today. Why don't we start with some brief introductions with Priya, and then we'll dive into our first question.
Thank you, Ben. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm Priya Paul, the founder and CEO of RegDesk. We're excited to have such a esteemed panel, Don and Liz, on the call today, and look forward to talking about AI within at RegDesk itself. We are working on a lot of AI projects. We provide AI tools for regulatory teams to, especially with submission management, but we can get into the details of that and look forward to the great discussion.
And next we'll turn it over to Liz.
Good morning. I am Liz Haynes, the Vice President of Global Regulatory Affairs at Transmedics. I've been in the med device space for about 20 years. I'm also a part-time lecturer at Northeastern University teaching regulatory affairs. And that's who I am.
Thank you, Liz. And last but not least, Don.
Hi, good morning, everyone. My name's Don Ellis. I've been in the regulated medical device and pharmaceutical business for more than 35 years, having responsibility here at Riva Medical for quality and regulatory affairs, and have past responsibilities for quality, regulatory affairs, and clinical affairs. So very excited about this particular topic, and hopefully we can have an interactive, engaging conversation.
Well, we're excited to have all three of you with us today. So with that, let's dive in and let's maybe set the stage here for this conversation. So what are the emerging regulatory trends that each of you see has the potential to reshape the compliance landscape? And I'll start with Priya for this question.
From what we are seeing, well, two things. One is just technology as software tools to help automate a lot of the processes within regulatory teams that are manual, spreadsheet-based, form-based. So how do you automate that? That way, that's one. And those tools can also help bring transparency to across global teams. That's been important for a lot of regulatory leaders. The second way, there's AI, hence a lot of the participants, attendees here are also interested in the topic of AI. And we understand AI through ChatGPT and some other functions, but how do you leverage AI for regulatory operations? That's a big question, and that's where we're seeing the interest, the trend, that's where a lot of the discussions are headed.
Don, Liz, any emerging kind of regulatory trends that you're seeing?
I'm going to say it less of a trend, more of a reality. The regulatory landscape that we compete in is increasingly complex, and more countries are publishing or adopting regulatory requirements in markets where they historically had not. And so for regulatory professionals, the challenge is being able to understand what's going on in those markets, understand your products, and be able to translate your understanding of those products into regulatory compliance submissions, and engage in the dialogues with the relative boards of health, and to be able to find tools that can make that process more elegant, more efficient, I think is kind of what's exciting about where we are in regulatory affairs and where we are with partners like Regdesk and other solution providers.
I think to bounce off of what Don also said is there's so many new countries adapting regulations. I mean, if you look back, and this was actually a lecture the other night of if you look back just 5, 8 years ago, their countries that had regulations was maybe around 78 countries, somewhere around there. And now we're looking at, 140 countries with regulations, and how do we manage global submissions that we're not globally harmonized either. So, we're still trying to work on what does global harmonization look like, and how do we leverage AI to help us with that? And, when you're starting to look at all of that, you're also now starting to consider your resources and how do you explain to your organizations that global regulatory affairs, registrations, compliance, commercialization activities has just completely like boomed in the last year or two, to be very honest.
So let's stay on that topic then. And Liz, I'll go back to you then. So how do regulatory teams then proactively adapt to some of these changes? You mentioned, a doubling in countries adopting new regulations.
So how do we adopt? We find tools that help us. We try to look at tools that can minimize the amount of submissions. So utilizing documentation across multiple submission requirements. So if you have requirements in EU, are they the same that you have in Taiwan, et cetera? So how do you leverage documentation to be more efficient with your submissions? But also, how do you manage it in the sense of you need to double up your teams, but maybe not necessarily if you're using AI technology. So how do you use AI technology to help you just really manage the broad spectrum of requirements? And then also, how do you track all those requirements too? Because that's another concern, is how do I know what's required in Sri Lanka versus, China or Japan? And so how do you manage all that? And so really trying to use AI technology to say, okay, what does a submission look like globally? And then also, how do we support global harmonization? And again, that's where AI technology could start to come into play. I don't know, Priya, what do you think from
Yeah,
what you say?
absolutely. I think what I missed in my first comment was I missed out on the Reg Intel piece and the demand for regulatory intelligence, some tools, some way to keep teams up to date and apprised of what's changing around the world. We've not seen a demand like that. The companies are truly struggling. It's hard. If you are an organization that is global, even if you're large, even if you have regional teams, the fact that you're not getting real-time data on where the changes are happening, because also not every agency sends out a notification in their newsletter or alerts companies of the changes that are taking place. Sometimes they make changes and they'll release a guideline and it'll be embedded in their website somewhere. There's no way of knowing that till somebody. When we do that, we have a team that's dedicated to doing that type of research, but that's what teams are looking for. So we get a tremendous amount of inquiries that are focused on Reg Intel. And not just give me the requirements that for each country, but it's that alerts. Can you let me know ahead of time? We have had clients prior to using RegDesk. They came to us because they were dealing with CAPAs, non-compliance. And not only this, but now the authorities are also asking companies to perform this impact assessment. So not only do you need, they're saying, do you know, are you keeping up to date with changes to regulations, but standards and guidances? Do you know what products those changes will impact? And have you performed that impact assessment? And how do you tie it all in? Which elements are, it's all fragmented within organizations. And that's what's frustrating for them is that somebody, there's a separate team that does Reg Intel. Sometimes if you don't have those resources, you're really reliant on your distributors to give you those updates, but they're not giving you those updates. And then you've really missed out on any changes. You're then reacting when that change happens or something happens to customs, and then you realize, oh, this change occurred. And I think teams are exhausted not having tools that having giving providing tools to client to teams really empowers them because now they're not blindly relying on third-party vendors and suppliers. They have knowledge in-house. They can make decisions better. They can strategize and plan for what's upcoming better. So regulatory intelligence is truly, I think, at the crux of the matter. If you can have all the KPIs, but if you're not keeping up to date on changes, that's a big handicap for companies.
Just another add-on to the complexity, and I think virtually everyone on the call is aware of it. It's not only the regulations that are changing, but so many of the regulations now are based on understanding harmonized standards. And the world of harmonized standard creation is a maze for many of us. Which standards apply to my products? Which version of the standard is current today? Which version of the standard is recognized by which country because they haven't all adopted the exact same version of the standard, and all of that needs to get baked into this stew, this dinner called a regulatory submission and a regulatory compliance plan. And that's where, again, I think the opportunity for software to help us work more effectively, help us understand the environment more efficiently, is a real opportunity for us in this industry.
Yeah.
I'll save a majority of our questions that we're getting for the end here, but we do have one that I think could be pertinent kind of right now on this topic. And it's what tools are you using to track these new or revised regulations in 140 plus countries? Liz, I might open that up to you since you that was a point you
I
made.
opened up the can of worms. No, it's a
Yeah.
good question. There's multiple tools out there. So I think it really depends on what Priya mentioned, the size of your team. Do you have a dedicated team that's just looking at constant changes? Some larger companies do. Even some smaller companies have, it's a great co-op intern project is to come in and kind of help look at all the countries that have changed. So it really depends on kind of what does your regulatory organization look like? What is your commercial distribution looking like or your global strategy looking like? And then from there, really dialing into what tools work for you and what keeps you up to date. I know some systems give you the immediate update when it's released and publicized from a country. Other ones hold it out until the end of the week or whatever it may be. I know with Priya's team, they do video updates as well, which is always a great tool to have as well. And actually sometimes breaks things down a little bit easier for regulatory to understand because there's just so much coming at a regulatory department on a day-to-day basis.
That's really helpful. Well, Liz, thank you. Let's dive into this next question here around AI. And so in what ways has AI technology transformed regulatory compliance? And Don, we can start with you for this question.
Again, hopefully this is more of a Don's expression of a future state. I think that there is an opportunity for AI to be transformative. In the military, we use the expression called a force multiplier. How do I take my people? What can I add to them so that they're more effective, that they're more efficient, that they're capable of doing more? And again, I think that that's areas where AI can help us. I think Priya mentioned it. Most of us have had some interaction with AI, and typically it's through a tool like ChatGPT. I'm not sure ChatGPT-like software can help in the regulated medical device space or in the regulatory affairs space specifically, because I don't know that the language libraries for it to learn how to write specific sections of the submission will ever be available. I know I, and I think most companies redact virtually everything that's in a regulatory submission. So there's not a whole lot for ChatGPT to learn in order to help us write a CMC section of a regulatory submission. So I don't think that it will help us there. But I do think it can help us understand what the regulatory requirements are by market, what kinds of information we have stored, what that information is, and translate that into an understanding of the regulatory requirements that are established in each regulated country and help us be more effective and more efficient in parsing that information to where it belongs. And in keeping those documents live. And again, I think it can also help us on the overall regulatory planning, regulatory metrics, KPI, part of the puzzle. Where are my products on the market? Which countries are approved? Which version of that product is approved? And again, I think there's an opportunity there for AI-enabled tools to be a great augment to our standard business processes and really improve the way we're running our medical device companies.
Priya, in what ways do you see AI really transforming regulatory compliance?
Yeah, so we have a special team, dedicated dev team, dedicated to AI projects. We've already implemented a bunch of AI tools within our system. And then there are, as Don mentioned, some future state tools as well. How can we really push AI to do more than what we are already doing at Regdesk? One of the areas is with AI is with we were talking about regulatory intelligence, so let's stick to that for a second. With regulatory intelligence, other than US, which is more product specific requirements, majority of the countries are not product specific, they're classification specific requirements. When a client has that, the question still is, okay, my product falls under class two, and here are the requirements in Egypt for class two, for example, or India. But then the question is, okay, how does it relate to my product? And are there any additional requirements on top of these general class two that apply to my product? And that's where AI can come in because the legislations only give you requirements by classification, but the AI can learn the additional requirements for a specific product type and augment that intel that the legislations are saying. So that's one way. And you can have more advanced chat GPT type chats. But for example, ChatGPT does not give you the source of the information, which then is not reliable for regulatory industry because we need to know, well, what is the source of that information? With the tools we're building, you will have the source of the information. So you know that, okay, this information's accurate because one, it's verified it through these five sources, and based on these sources, these are also weighted sources. So that's one area, and you can start to ask. Get intel even quicker than, I mean, we're known to provide intel in a format that's so easily digestible. You don't have to do Boolean searches. But I think with the in today's day and age, we want the answers even quicker than that. So having a chat feature that gives you product-specific intel, or you can ask a question, it'll give you that intel and answer that specific question for you. That's quite powerful. On the other side, it's a submission building. That's big because one of the complaints we've received consistently is the redundancy of effort. That same document can be used in 20 other countries, but how do we leverage that? Our just teams are just repeating the same work over and over again and ending up they're wasting significant amount of time building these submissions. So can AI learn the content of your application? You put in the effort once, let's say you do a 510K or an MDR. Can the submission learn your content? That way, when you go international, now if you want to go to India, Japan, China, can the AI learn the content and auto-populate your submissions? Can you upload a document into the system and the AI learns reads the document now. So it's more than what the OCR technology provides, but it's reading the document and then auto-populating your submissions using that content from the document. And that's what we're doing. That's where we see the advantage, because now submissions that used to take months to build, our clients are able to prepare them within hours, actually. But if at the most, maybe it'll take you a week. But I mean, that's the level of when we say transformative, that the time savings and the efficiency is quite transformative.
Liz, I would open this question up to you about AI and really kind of its transformative impact on this industry.
No, it's great. And actually, to jump off of Priya, so being more efficient regulatory team means you can get products to the market quicker. And so that's really the premise of why that potential poll or the poll question was raised, is do you have KPIs in your regulatory department? Because if you're not tracking how many submissions are you doing, how global are they, is it a new registration, is it a re-registration, is it an update, all the aspects of what regulatory is, how are you then ensuring that you're meeting the business needs of commercial distribution globally? And so really starting to pay attention to how do you use your AI to also benefit, how do you use your AI to also benefit future growth? And how do you just continue evolving your regulatory department and evolving the organization to make sure that you continue to be a global, if that's what your business model is?
That's it. I'm glad you brought up the poll question here too. I can't see it on my screen, but I'll have Tyler with our team get the results here too, as we get into the kind of more of that, those questions about metrics and KPIs as well. But before we get to that, I think the next question here we'll turn to is, how can organizations stay prepared to mitigate compliance risks while maintaining operational continuity in these evolving regulations? Priya, I'll turn back to you for this question.
2 years ago, had you brought up this question, we wouldn't even have brought up this concept of RIM. And RIM, this concept of Regulatory Information Management System has been popular among life science companies, so your biotech, pharma companies. And Gartner's done significant research, and they have a lot of published papers and literature on the efficiency of having a holistic RIM solution in the life sciences. With the way, as Don and Liz mentioned, the number of countries that are now have regulations, Hong Kong recently, now they have a regulatory framework, and there's hardly any harmonization. It's becoming so complex. And with EU MDR, that in itself is another complexity. You're compounding a regulatory framework as you're navigating globally to be so burdensome and onerous. And in order to manage it all without having non-compliances and also getting hit, so you have this complexity, but then there are expectations from the health agencies for you to perform activities a certain way and keep up to date on all these changes, not just to regulations, but standards as well. And Don mentioned the challenge with harmonized standards as well. It's too much. And I think companies are realizing that they absolutely need tools and technology to move forward. So if you're not adopting RIM or considering it, or some software tool that will manage regulatory processes in a holistic way, you are going to fall behind. This is the future. It's here. A lot of companies are realizing it, but you can't run away from it. If you're still using spreadsheets and processes, and if you have a basic tracking tool and a separate regulatory tool, that is not a software tool. We're talking about a holistic system that has built in, let's say, Reg Intel. So you need some feed of Reg Intel into the system. You need to be able to manage change assessments through the system, manage submission, do submission management, not in folder structure of stead documents. I mean, teams are also moving away from that. That's an archaic way of managing global submissions. Now it's about, like I said, that AI. Can I instead of creating one big STED document and distributing that among regional teams, can I build these submissions on my own? So I'm not even reliant on my distribution network to build these. And also for regional teams, it's a great tool because they are burdened by just the number of submissions they have, they're responsible for an organization. By providing them these tools, they are not also that there's this codependency also that, oh, I'm waiting on this document from this person or that person, and they had, oh, this there's vacation day here, they're on break. You are eliminating all those external factors. You have one centralized platform. The minute the US or EU team builds a submission, the international team comes right in. They don't need any documents from you. They're building submissions on their own. I mean, that's quite powerful.
Liz, anything to add on this question?
I think just exactly what Priya said, the more you empower your regulatory affairs team to be able to utilize technology such as AI technology, RIM systems, all of those types of things, you're then empowering the organization to stop worrying about regulatory and regulatory being the roadblock, and regulatory is now waiting for the company to catch up for their global distribution and registrations. And the moment you can start also pulling that back from distributors holding your licenses, et cetera, you're now empowering your organization to stand up and really start to put together that foundation to be a strong global company without having to consistently, in the old ages, worry about regulatory being the gatekeeper or the roadblock to getting things done.
We've got a couple of questions here coming into, and Don, I want to pose this one to you here, which is a question about, and I've talked about larger organizations, but smaller companies. And the question is, are these tools beneficial for small companies that may only have a single submission in a single country and have limited resources as well as internal expertise?
It's a great question, and I worked at both large multinationals and small startup companies, and I think the Priya said it well. I don't know how to manage this activity in 2024 and beyond without having a information framework in order to do it. Whether it's a component of a large multinational that's executing the registrations in a country for a business or a consultant, a distribution partner that you have in that country. You still have to convey the information. Somebody has to understand the regulatory requirements. Somebody has to negotiate with the Board of Health, answer questions that are inevitable with each regulatory submission, and understand what actually is approved in that market, because labeling claims and product configurations approved in one country are not the labeling claims and the product configurations approved
Claims
in
in
a
the
different
product.
market. So, small company or large company, we're all struggling with the same kinds of challenges. And I think we've reached a point where, I think Priya said it well, where the shared point file folder structure and Excel spreadsheets aren't able to get us out of, I'll confess, I've had this audit finding in the past. Here's a change that we've made to our one product in your model. And did I consider the impact, the implications of that change in all the countries that are part of MDSAP? Can I show an auditor where I've gone through and considered what significant change means in each country where they've defined what a significant change is? And the checklists in the United States, Canada, and Europe are not identical decision trees. They're similar, but they're certainly not identical. So how do you, and how does a one-person regulatory affairs shop or a 100-person regulatory affairs shop do that consistently, routinely, and able to find that information going forward? Again, I think that that's where we're in a sweet spot, where AI and these kinds of solutions are no longer a nice to have. I think they're essential for us going forward.
Priya, Liz, anything else to add from either of you before we move on?
No, I think we covered the basis. I know you have a few more questions and the audience has questions.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we asked the poll question about whether or not your organization has KPIs that you're tracking around submissions or registrations, and it was pretty split. 52% said yes, 48% said no. And so that brings us to this next question around metrics and KPIs. What should organizations regulatory teams be tracking to gauge the effectiveness of their compliance initiatives? And really, how can these metrics tie into overall business success? And Liz, we'll start with you on this question.
Sure, it's a great question. So speaking at from a previous company I was at, we implemented KPIs into our organization, or into our regulatory department, to really start tracking, you know, what is the right cadence of submissions, one, but also two, how quickly are we turning around submissions? Is there a business case associated with, you know, targeting a country? A lot of times you get the distributor who's emailing you because they got your name from something, and they're telling you that you need to register in that country, but you don't understand what the business case is and all of those types of things. Is there an ROI associated with that particular registration? So really trying to understand, one, what is your baseline right now? Where are you at from a registration standpoint? How often are you doing renewals? All those types of things. Do your resources match up with what the company's expectations is? And then also understanding your business strategy. A lot of times people don't take into consideration that regulatory also needs to understand the business model, the business cases, and all those aspects, the business strategy, and how to be successful to help the business move forward, especially when you're talking global and all these increased regulations. A lot of companies are still thinking, I can go into India without having to register, and that's no longer the case. So you get a lot of those types of questions in these meetings that you're having with management, and you're trying to justify, you know, why do I need an additional 10 more new hires? Because we now have EU MDR, 146 more regulations. We've seen an increase in requirements from FDA, all while trying to like talk about IMDRF and global harmonization. And it becomes quite a bit. So having KPIs helps you start to track, okay, year over year, what am I looking at? But also quarter over quarter, where can I flex people? Where can I use a RIMSIS? Where can I use AI technology to help get ahead before we start falling behind? And then having to figure out which priority is no longer a priority. So definitely the use of KPIs in my experience has helped, because it does help you create the business model to say, why do I need substantial growth in a regulatory department? Or why do I need substantial tools to help continue to progress the market for the progress the market for the business going forward?
Priya, are there any tools that you would recommend to measure and track these KPIs?
That's a good question, Ben, because Liz, as we call her, with her former organization, she truly had her KPIs down, and we loved it because most companies don't have KPIs. And if KPIs for them has only been, oh, we need to do these many submissions, and these are the number of submissions we have performed over the course of a year. What Liz is referring, when we're talking about KPIs, is beyond that, what Liz just mentioned. And that data helps because it acts as a baseline. Then you can also see how the tools that you're using, are they really effective? But if you have no baseline data, it's hard to for you to justify tools if you don't have that baseline data. The challenge for companies is they don't have tools to actually measure that data. Where do you do it? In Excel sheets? Where do you track this? Who is tracking this? And is leadership on top of it? You know, I know for Liz, this was a mandatory thing. Her team was very well aligned, every single one, that they have to capture this data. It was not once in a while we'll capture it. Oh yeah, for this meeting, we need the data. The practice at our organization, former organization, while she was leading it, was truly, we saw it, that everybody, it was a data that they lived by. They all were aligned with the KPIs. So the leaders have to drive the KPIs. It cannot just be they have it, but no one's really implementing it, no one's standing by it. And so, yes, within our system, we have tools within our tracking module about what's your anticipated submission date. And then the software calculates a lot of these timelines and generates reports on KPIs for you. But again, even if you don't have those tools, the leaders need to drive this, or somebody needs to take the initiative to drive this within the organization and make it a culture. And then when you have the baseline, it is easier to justify the cost of additional tools to support your effort and your goals. Because I know with Liz, her team, they had a lot of good baseline data. So after she started using RegDesk, she was able to come back to us and say, wow, it's saving us this much time, which many of our current clients can't even say because they never had that baseline data. So for us, we appreciated that. We saw how that culturally, we saw how that also made the team that much more efficient when they once they had the tools. So yes, and I'm sure Don can provide some light as a leader himself as to how he established KPIs. I know Don recently moved to a small organization, but he was at a very large organization prior to this.
There's an old adage that if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. And I think that that's true in regulatory affairs, just like any other portion of a medical device company. So what things are important, and I love the language that Liz used, how do we keep regulatory affairs as a strategic business partner? In a past organization, we had dollars that we reported out on our quarterly management review discussions that were directly aligned with the regulatory affairs team executing according to plan. So, what are the products? What are the milestones? What are the KPIs? What are the financial drivers? And how are we doing about understanding where we are collectively and individually on that journey? And again, I think that that's where the establishment of KPIs and having tools that help us manage those become essential. In today's regulated marketplace, I don't know how we do our work without those kinds of things today.
Don, as you mentioned that, we've got a good question coming in, which is how do you get leadership bought into tools like RIM when they don't normally have a budget for these tools and are just accustomed to adding headcount? It seems like it could be resistance to change.
Again, I'm smiling with that last piece, the resistance to change. That's been something that I've lived through for 3 or 4 years as we've been working on defining and establishing what a RIM solution should be in an enterprise. The easiest thing for me historically is to have the business conversation. It takes us X amount of dollars to hire and train an FTE. And if I need 10 FTEs in order to execute this, then it's a, 5x the cost of buying and deploying a RIM solution that can make my current team much more effective and much more efficient. So it's approaching this process just like any other strategic business asset. What's the return on investment that we can share with our leadership team that is associated with this work? For us in past organizations, and I think it'd be interesting to get Liz's input, most of my regulatory team, in terms of total number in the larger organization that I most recently worked with, was working on regulatory affairs projects that were either market expansion or change. So more than 75% of my people were working in processes that we historically don't talk about as regulatory professionals, and most of our resumes don't talk about those things. We all talk about which PMAs and 510Ks we've written and technical files we've created. But most of the people were working with the teams on change evaluations for manufacturing design labeling changes, or taking a product that was approved in the United States and get it registered in Taiwan or Russia, or you pick the market, since there are so many that require registrations today that, again, historically have not. So in this world, it's here's the number of registrations that I need to have. Here's the cycle time, the length of time that my initial registration will be good. And here's the small army of people and consulting dollars that I'll need to spend in order to do it the way I'm doing it today. And then it actually makes it fairly easy to justify the expense of a RIM solution that can manage this more effectively and more efficiently. It almost inevitably comes out to be a cost savings for an organization, even though the dollar figures associated can be significant.
Liz, I see you nodding your head there.
Yeah, I was going to say, I fully agree. I think what we've started to see from a regulatory career standpoint in regulatory growth is becoming that strategic business partner, which then expands our role much further. And from what used to be regulatory is just in their little silo, writing their submissions and, doing that to now sitting, and talking about business case and do we want to target that region or go after that international market, those types of things? And so with that increase, people haven't understood sometimes that that means that we have to expand our resources and how can we do that? And to Don's point, sometimes hiring five FTEs, it's just not a simple like, let's put the job recs out and the people come coming and want to join. It's really months of recruiting. It's selling yourself as an organization and all those things. And by the time you look at that cost, where you could supplement it with a RIMS or an AI solution or something along those lines, it becomes a wash and you're, at least implementing something that can get you ahead versus consistently being behind from a regulatory standpoint. Because once you're a department that gets behind, it's really tough to dig out of that with the resources you have or lack of resources and no tools to help you. And then you just become the long pole for the organization at that point in time. So yeah, definitely.
Priya, I'll give you an opportunity to weigh in here, or we can move on to another question.
Yes, yeah, so just quick comment. I mean, but Liz and Don answered these very well. We are on the other side, and a lot of companies will reach out. Well, when a client's there and we're in the negotiation process and they've selected us, they will frequently ask, well, I need to create a business case. What are the KPIs, right? They are asking us what is the ROI of having a RIM? Now, ROI could mean different things to different organizations. For many leaders, big ROI is saving on FTE costs because it is not as easy to hire, and not just in regulatory field, in any field, getting the right candidates and then for them to deliver at a global level. There is that efficiency. So if you're hiring reg team to manage more submissions and that you're going global, usually that's the inflection point. Oh, now our product, we're trying to go to 15 more markets. Even if you hire one or two additional people, they're not going to be able to support the 15 markets because they probably don't have the knowledge, the in-depth knowledge for those 15 countries, right? So that's where when you leverage software and tools and that can give you that knowledge and they can make the current team much more efficient at that. That's there. But for some companies, teams, it could be time. Many times companies will opt for a RIM because they're in a non-compliance issue with health authority. And that leads them to build a business case to say that this is not sustainable with the current processes we have. And look at all these CAPAs we have to deal with. We need a tool. So it really depends. But if a company has baseline data, which I was talking about, their KPIs, which most of them don't, then it really helps build that business case to say, okay, even if we try out a RIM platform for a year, we can then show our CFO and CEO that, look, this was our baseline. This is how efficient we are, or how much cost and time savings we have had. And then it's a no-brainer. Then the organization's willing to invest because it's an investment at that point rather than a cost center.
There's a couple of really good questions here coming into kind of around the idea of trust in artificial intelligence and AI. What expectation is there? This is one question we've gotten is what expectation is there on validating that the AI is performing correctly? And Priya, what controls have you put in to closely review that AI output?
Yes. So the RIM, our RIM solution platform, as a standard practice, it's fully validated. With AI, they are validation testing that's performed, and that's the way. And so we look at the output with AI on Reg Intel. It's really weird. This is why we believe in the source of the information. Even if you don't use the AI element of the Reg Intel, just our Reg Intel module in itself, we have a section called laws. It always references the law. In fact, the page numbers where we derive that information from. So that for us, for and now there are many aspects and spectrum of AI, right? So I'm just generalizing, but with what we're doing, yeah, the validation to ensure that the output is there and that the data is correct, but the data is not set in stone. There is option for for teams to modify the data, that even if AI made a suggestion, then you can modify it, and then the AI learns from it. So there are two levels of AI. One is that it's not learning from aggregate of everyone's submissions. It's learning from your data, your documents. It's very specific to that client and their data. Then you have AI tools that are where it can take aggregated data, anonymized data, learn from it, and make suggestions based on that. So for example, if you there are hundreds and thousands of standards out there. If you have a product, can the system suggest what standards would apply to your product? Now that AI can do that, it can suggest. But AI can also help populate. So depending on what application of AI, but everything is validated to ensure that the results are there. And when you can't show always the source of the information, those are then suggestions, which then you can modify, and then the AI continues to learn. It's always a learning process.
That's great, Priya. Thank you. I think kind of on the similar topic of trust, maybe for Don and for Liz, is how do we grow to trust this kind of new and emerging technology when it feels like it is moving so fast, really, at all parts of our lives, and specifically in this kind of regulatory landscape. Liz, we can start with you for this question.
So it's really about building the partnership, right? Everybody is always apprehensive about AI, except I feel like ChatGPT, we just all jump right into it and kind of see what it has. But when you're in regulatory, which is, you're working for a regulated industry, and you're in regulatory, so you're the front line of compliance. You have to build a partnership with the company you're working with. So, for instance, when I was working with Priya and her team, it was a constant, like, we were having weekly calls, we were having weekly discussions, we were raising things that we weren't really sure, like, just questions, because you're still learning and still growing in that aspect. And until you can start to build that relationship and trust, and then start trusting the system, and then start seeing the fruits of the output of all of that and how it's benefiting not only your department but also the organization, it really comes down to the matter of trust and being open to have those conversations. A lot of times, the society we live in, we want instant gratification. We want an off-the-box system, bring it in, it's going to work, I'm going to submit, we're not going to have any problems, and like life is going to go on great. That's not how life is. And so we're at a point where we have to realize you're not going to get that instant gratification, but the success of it will come in time, and you have to be okay with that. And you have to be okay with the learning. You can't just automatically think, oh, well, I can use Teams and Zoom and this and that nowadays. I should just be able to pick up and go. You have to dedicate some resources to understand, to learn, to teach, to grow. And once you can do that, you will see the success. But again, it's a matter of don't get worried about hearing the acronym AI and get hung up on it. Start to use the tool, start to see, start to get the successes so you get comfortable. And the more you use it, the more we know AI will learn it. So it'll start to make us all more comfortable.
The
Don, anything?
only other comment I'll add is that I think it's important to recognize that these are things that we're doing to help our team members become more effective and efficient, but we're not replacing the team members. There's always a component of, is the submission right? There's a regulatory professional who's looking at the document, who's reviewing the section, as Priya noted, who's making any of the changes that are needed in order for that to be a document that goes, and then that whole submission package goes through a normal review process where the regulatory professional and the Board of Health have a dialogue on whether or not those submission content are adequate to meet the safety and effectiveness requirements of that individual market. So this is really about making people more effective and more efficient, and trusting the tool, and welcoming, honestly, the input from the tool in helping an individual be better at doing the job that we're asking them to perform. So it I think part of the getting the cultural piece. I'm not replacing people. The tool isn't submitting documents in and of itself to any market of the world, but it is augmenting the capabilities of our staff and our organization.
And that touches on, Don, actually, a question we've just gotten in, which I think is a poignant one, which is, Essentially, do you think that at some point with the integration of AI that regulatory specialists won't be needed anymore?
I don't think that that's ever going to happen, to be honest with you. There's going to be a regulatory specialist that's going to be participating in every core team to get the product ideated, and get the product developed. And AI isn't going to be sitting there having the conversations with quality and R&D and marketing on what the labeling claims are and what proof documents I need, what the clinical study needs to be, and how statistically it's powered. AI is never going to get there. So there will always be a role for the regulatory affairs professional in an organization. And the AI is never going to do, and Liz made this point, I think, very well. AI isn't going to be able to help you with the strategic business decision on whether this registration in this market is worthwhile, whether or not there's a return on investment that warrants the $100,000 of expenditure and time that it takes in order to secure, the marketing authorization and the 2-year delay, to get that product approved in China, just to pick out a market. So I see this as a technology that needs to evolve, that needs to develop, but it's here to help a regulated medical device community, not to replace a regulated medical device community.
Absolutely. And I'm glad that this question came up because sometimes it's interesting because sometimes teams will think, oh, it's AI submission generator. It should just work like magic. It's not magic. It's truly making your teams efficient in the sense it's removing that administrative redundant work they have to do. But the brains behind it is still legislations can only give you so much. And as we know that you can follow the legislations to the T and still get deficiency letter back from the health agency. And those deficiencies are now being addressed by the teams. And there's so AI cannot work and cannot be successful without the input of the team, input of the regional teams who are conversing with the health authorities, because AI cannot learn the minds of the health authorities. And so there is that. So please don't look at AI as, I know one of the questions is, well, how do we know? Does it just arbitrarily fill out submissions and then we submit it? It doesn't work that way. It's not arbitrarily just pulling in random information from the internet, putting together an application and directly submitting it to the agency. In fact, that conduit to integrate with the health agency doesn't even exist because health agencies won't allow that. You have to have your internal team members or regional dedicated authorized representatives to do the submission. So there is that review process. But what it does do is, as I said, is makes the teams, it's so much faster to build submissions because you're not relying this. There's so much time wasted in just exchange of documents, waiting on this person, waiting on that person. Imagine getting rid of all of that. And now everyone's working through one centralized platform. So that's the level of efficiency that you can expect. So, yes, please don't let AI scare you. In fact, work on it. And we do work with, even with Don, I mean, we had weekly meetings with him, but we work with our clients very closely to understand what are your pain points, where our strength at Regdesk is building technology to address your pain points is to automate and digitize. And that was Don's weekly challenge. Okay, my team's doing this in a very manual way. I need for you to automate this process. I don't want them using forms. So it's not with RIMS, it's not just AI, but it's really the automation of those processes, those impact assessments. Can you just do them directly through the platform? Because you can have these automated workflows and it's seamless. And when audits happen, even for the auditor, that picture's right there. You can say this product came in here. It went through change assessment here. This was the impact of the change assessment, right? So think of it that way, that beautiful flow of how things function. So you're not, even for audits, your audits are more seamless as well.
We've got about 5 minutes left here in this webinar, and I want to pose kind of one final sort of hopefully thought-provoking question to each of you. And Liz, we'll start with you on this, is how do you see the future, how do you see AI impacting the future of regulatory affairs?
Can I actually phrase it more? What would be my wish list of AI in the future? And I would say that it would be working on the whole global harmonization aspect. It is a lot to manage so many regions that have regulatory requirements. And while, yes, like Priya and Don have both said before, We're not looking to have an AI read the document and know which submission to drop it into in what proper area, but to start actually more looking at standards and harmonization and all those types of things, and how can we create some area of global harmonization so we're not so overwhelmed or overburdened, or just even having to consistently look at all the changing regulations on a daily basis to make sure that we don't have any compliance issues, et cetera. So for me, if we could get AI to start thinking global harmonization and maybe doing some influence for us, that would be fabulous from my perspective.
Don, how about you? What's on your wish list?
I think a continuation of some of the things we talked about today. How do we take the tool and have it take care of some of the more esoteric and routine aspects of doing regulatory affairs and make my team members more effective and more efficient? That's where I think many of the solution providers are focused today. I know Regdesk is. And I think that that's my most immediate need for artificial intelligence. I still think that there's an art in having humans phrase the content of a document, understanding the arguments that they're trying to make and how we are trying to convey the information. And I think that those discussions in regulatory submissions are nuanced to the point where I don't ever envision artificial intelligence being able to write those documents for a regulatory professional or for a business. But I do think AI has a very specific and a very clear role in my mind on how do I make my overall organization more effective, more efficient?
Priya,
And
some final
that's,
questions.
yes, and that's exactly what we're working on. We wish we could do magic of what Liz is asking for. That is definitely a dream, something on the dream list. But it's about leveraging AI natural language processes to, we're not trying to leverage AI just to leverage AI. It's really where do we bring efficiency? Where do we eliminate that repetition? That's our focus, is really that efficiency aspect of it. Can we do it faster? Is there technology that does it faster? Do we need five humans for this? If not, can we just do this so the teams can do more strategic work? So for us, that's where we're leveraging not just AI, but a lot of natural language processes as well, because that's what teams are demanding. They're saying, I don't want to have to do this. Can I just upload my MDR or my application, and then you just auto-populate it? Just don't even let me copy paste it. Just you read the document, pull the right information from it. And that those are the challenges we're trying to take on with our AI team in-house. But yeah.
Well, I think that's a great place to stop, and it is 11 o'clock here in the Twin Cities. So I want to thank our talented panel here, Liz, Don, and Priya, for sharing your insight and your expertise. And a special thank you to Priya and Regdesk for sponsoring today's webinar. And another thank you to everybody who tuned in today and spent part of this beautiful record warmth day here in Minnesota on this webinar. So thank you all for being here. I want to say thank you once again to our panel. Thank you for being with us and spending part of your morning with us, and have a wonderful day.